on again. There you go. Good morning, great men and women of God. Yeah, so good. I had to say it twice. We call you great men and women of God because at Pulpit Rock, our purpose is to love people to Christ and help them journey with God. And we believe that both of those things are accomplished best when we begin to believe what God says is true about us more than any other voice. And we begin to believe the greatness that God is calling us into and the relationship he's calling us into and the life he's calling us into. And so we believe that, and we want to take every opportunity to remind us who we really are. Because in this world, we're going to continue to fight the battle of the voices that we hear. And so we want to start this morning by reminding you that God loves you far more than you ever believed. And that you are important to him. And that you are a great man or woman of God. So good morning. And I'm excited that you're here because as we just prayed, we are starting a brand new series in the book of Ecclesiastes. And if you can spell Ecclesiastes, you are already ahead of the game. We're excited for you. We're also going to be taking communion towards the end of our time together. So I want you to be thinking about that. So we dive in this morning. I want to pose a thought to you, and it's this. What are the important questions of life? In my experience, these questions change in different seasons of your life. When you're younger, you ask questions like, what kind of man or woman am I becoming? Who are the people who are going to love me for me? What do I really want in life out of this exchange for all of my labor? As you get older, your questions begin to change. You begin to wonder, why do some people have it better than me? Why do good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people? And why am I not a better person? As you begin to pass the midpoint of your life, you ask things like this, am I really making a difference? Why do I often feel trapped? How do I handle my limitations? And then as you begin to slide towards home in life, you begin to ask questions like, why is my body becoming unreliable? Who's going to replace me? Is my story important to anyone? These are the important questions of life, and I think just as important as recognizing those questions is figuring out where we're going to take those questions. Where do we take the important questions of life? Earlier this year, I was in this room at the funeral of one of our longtime members, Eldon Lyon. I was so moved by this service because a lot of different of Eldon's different family members got up and spoke. But what really moved me was when Eldon's grandson got up and spoke. And he said for about a year of his life, he would have breakfast with his grandfather. And they would talk about the important questions of life. And he said, I will never forget those breakfasts. I will always treasure the wisdom that we gleaned just from sitting across the table with each other. As I heard him speaking about that, I started thinking about my own grandfather. My grandfather's name was Ed Sammons. He was a wise and godly and successful insurance agent, and he died when I was 25 years old. I have his Bible here. That's the one thing I said, hey, when I went to his office after he had passed, I said, could I have his Bible? So I've got his Bible here, and I've got his bulletin from his funeral here, and this is an important treasure to me. Although, as I heard Eldon's grandson spoke, I began to realize a bit of regret because I regret not having more breakfast with my grandfather to talk about the important questions of life. When I was 25, I wasn't thinking about those, but now I'm thinking I would give anything to go back and sit across the table and ask those questions because that opportunity is gone. Now, why do you like to sit across from a grandfather and talk about life? It's because when you have journeyed with God for a lifetime, you've seen some of the ways that the world works, and you have perspective, right? You can cut through the confusion. You can offer simple truths. You can explain how to sustain. Grandparents are not threatened by doubts or questions. You notice that? Parents, sometimes we are. Our kids say they're doubting something, and we panic, right? What can we do to fix that? A grandparent's like, man, it's all right. I remember when I doubted that too. There's a peace there. And now that I'm 45 years old, I'm not yet at the midpoint of my life, but as I'm looking towards that, I feel like I'm starting to see both ends of life. They're both in my view. There are questions to the left of me, there's wisdom to the right, and here I am stuck in the middle with many of you. What if you could have 4 months of breakfast with your grandfather? What if you could have that opportunity? And what if your grandfather was actually one of the most successful, most powerful, and wisest men who ever lived? What would you ask him? Welcome to the book of Ecclesiastes, or as I call it, Breakfast with Grandpa. I want you to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, here's how you do it. You open up your Bible to the very front, to the table of contents. Mine is on page X. And then you look at the Old Testament, and you look about the middle of the Old Testament, and you'll see the book of Ecclesiastes. And I want you to turn there with us. Now, you might be visiting with us today, or you might be wondering, well, hey, I don't know if I'm really excited about a book like Ecclesiastes. It sounds kind of stodgy. It sounds kind of like it's from another time. Let me pose a thought to you to see if this is the kind of book you would enjoy or not. Philip Ryken says this: Ecclesiastes is for people who have their doubts about God but can't stop thinking about him. If that's you, this is your book. This might become your favorite book of the Bible for a season. This is a book of the Bible that welcomes questions, it welcomes doubts, it welcomes fears. It's a book that will give answers, although let me just warn you, they're not always easy and they're not always the ones you want to hear. But they are words of wisdom from a man who has spent his life journeying with and journeying without God. Now, I'll be honest, I've always wanted to teach this book. I've never felt old enough. But I'm at a point, like I said, where I think I'm starting to line up a little bit with these words. They take on meaning to me now. A few months ago when I bought my first pair of cheater glasses at Walgreens, I thought I heard God whisper, maybe it's time to teach the book. So we're going to do this book this year, and this is a part of our larger theme at Pulpit Rock of sustainability. We're asking the question, how do we sustain a journey with God throughout a lifetime? And so we're going to walk through this book because this book is written by a man, I think, who has learned some secrets about sustaining. Now, I want to just show you something because this is going to be a little bit different than some of the studies we normally do. Because this is such a dense book, I want to break the book into four sections that we're going to explore. Here they are. The first section, we're just going to talk about what is the point of life? How do I find meaning? The second point is addressing that question, does God really have a plan and why doesn't it seem to be working? The third one is how can I, in spite of a world of chaos and confusion, make the choice to have joy? And that last section is just from all ages, how do I really live with poise in life? How do I really live that way? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to tackle the first two sections over the next 2 months, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back to the other two later. Now, I want to encourage you to read along with us. And one thing we're going to do with our bulletin each week is we're going to give you the upcoming week's verses so you can read ahead and kind of make some notes and thoughts and be prepared for that. My prayer for you and for me is that these breakfasts with Grandpa will help you enjoy God and the life that he's given you. So let's slide into the booth. Let's order our coffee and our eggs, and let's have breakfast with Grandpa and talk about what is the point of life. We're going to start in verse 1, and first of all, let me introduce Grandpa to you, because you may not be familiar with him. Let me let him introduce himself. Verse 1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now, many of us are familiar with David from the Bible. David was a person that God tapped on the shoulder and said, you're going to be the king of Israel. But while God chose David, God's people said, we want someone else, and they chose Saul. So David had to live through many years of seemingly meaningless living while waiting for the throne. That's David, King David, famous King David, wrote the Psalms, killed Goliath, all that stuff. So who is the son of David? What's his name? Solomon. Solomon got to see firsthand the life of his father. Later, he would become king himself, and he would blow past all of the parameters of his father. He became the richest and wisest man in history. In fact, Solomon is a guy, he wrote three books, and as a young man, he wrote this book, The Song of Solomon, which many people consider the apex of romantic poetry. As he got a little older in life, he wrote Proverbs, which many people consider the greatest assembly of wisdom. And towards the end of his life, now, we find him writing his memoir, Ecclesiastes. And this is his book saying, I want you to learn from my mistakes. I want you to learn from my successes. Now, one thing about Solomon, I'm going to let you know up front, he is not going to pull any punches. He's not going to sugarcoat his life and make it sound better than it was. This is a man who chased after wine, women, and song. He walked with God. He walked without God. He had it all. He tried it all. He did it all. If you can imagine it, Solomon says, I did it. And maybe this is why so many of you have told me over the last few months, this is your favorite book of the Bible. I think it's because he tells you the good, the bad, and the ugly of life. And our world today just wants to hear some truth, right? So this is our grandpa for these breakfasts. He's a king, a business tycoon, a lover, a rogue. But he's also a man of God who has come to see life as it's meant to be seen through God's eyes. So before we dive in, though, I want to explain something here. This is going to be very important. Sometimes have you noticed that grandparents use words that you don't understand? Grandparents will say icebox instead of refrigerator. Grandparents will say Davenport instead of couch. Grandparents will say clicker insted of remote. So you ever heard the phrase clicker when it comes to that? Do you know what that's from, by the way? When I was growing up, we didn't have remote controls. I was the remote control. My dad would say, go turn it to channel 8, and I would run up and turn it to channel 8. But then we got a remote control, and it was a box with four buttons on it, and you would push it, and it would make a click sound. And somehow, science, the click would tell the TV to turn to a different channel and stuff. It's like that. And so now people will still call it clicker, and you're like, what does that even mean? Well, Solomon is going to use a word throughout this book that I think we have misunderstood. And the misunderstanding of this word has colored the entire way people have read this book. I've talked with people that have also said, some have said, this is my favorite book. Some other people said, oh, it's such a depressing book. Why? Well, let me show you this word in verse 2 that Solomon's going to use, and we need to understand what he's saying. Here it is in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 2. Hebel of Hebelim, says the preacher, Hebel of Hebelim, all is Hebel. So that should clear it up. Now let's go to verse 3. So what I did here is I actually just, spelled out in English this Hebrew word so you could really get a grasp of what Solomon is saying. Now, let me ask a question. What does your Bible say for these words? What are some words? Meaningless, what else? Smoke, what else? Vanity. Pointless, somebody once said. This is probably why many people have labeled Ecclesiastes a depressing book, because this word is going to appear all through it. And when you have a book that just says meaningless over and over and over again, you go, yeah, I guess life's pretty meaningless. But what if this is not what Solomon is saying at all? This is going to be meaningless. It clicked. Okay. So, imagine that this was on fire. You got another match back there, anything? Anyone have a... Amy, do you really have something? You're so awesome. Thank you. Okay. Oh. All right. You see that? Work with me. Thank you. Sometimes you just gotta let Grandpa do his stuff. You ready? See what I'm trying to grab here? This is Hebel. It means breath. It means vapor. It means mist. It's a morally neutral word. It's not bad. It's not good. It just is what it is. Now, here's what happened. So this book, Ecclesiastes, was written thousands of years ago. Well, a few thousand years later after it was written, Greek believers said, well, we have this thing, the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. We want to translate that into our language. So when they came to this word in Ecclesiastes, they assigned it to a Greek word that means emptiness, purposeless, or futility. And what just happened is we went from a word that had no moral attribute to it to a word that is pretty loaded with negative connotation. Then several hundred years later, in 1611, when they're translating the Bible now into the King James English, they just stuck with that word. They said, well, that means good, and that seems to work, and so they used the word meaningless or vanity. I think it is a mistake to assign morally negative values to a word that is morally neutral. So in this series, what I'm going to do throughout the whole book is I'm just going to go back to the word that Solomon originally used without bringing in additional later baggage, which is hebel. It's not good or bad, it just is. So what does hebel mean? Well, not all those Greek translators agreed with that translation of the negative word meaningless. Some of them used a word that the brother of Jesus Christ used in a letter that he wrote. Now see if you can pick it out from this verse from the book of James. James says, "What is your life? For you are a mist." And what's the primary nature of a mist? It appears for a little time and then it what? Vanishes. Grandpa, what's life like? Life is like a mist. It's always changing. It's always temporary. See, Solomon is not being negative in this book. He gets a bad rap for something that's not true. He's using a word that I think best captures the transitoriness of life. In fact, I can't think of a better word to describe life, especially as I'm getting older, than the phrase, life is change. Life is change. You blink and your baby girl is getting braces. You turn around and your anniversary of 20 years is right upon you. Hebel is a great word for a man like Solomon who's at the end of his life to use because for him, life is change. So in this study, I'm going to unburden this book from the negative associations that we have attributed to it, and I'm just going to let Grandpa say what Grandpa wants to say. So if I was going to take that verse in verse 2 and translate Hebel, any of these things might work for you. So let me give it, this is my translation. Change and transition, says the preacher. Mist and puzzle, all of life is temporary. I want to encourage you while we're in this study, anytime you see the word meaningless or vanity, you feel free to replace it with one of these, and I think it will help better unlock the book for us. Because here's the thing, if all of life truly is change, and that's his thesis, then it becomes crucial for our sustainability to find a fixed point. If all of life is change, what can we hold on to? What's true? We need something to hold on to when the storm comes, or the bad guy wins, or the good girl loses. So what is that fixed point, Grandpa? Well, before we get his answer, I want to just pause for a minute. We do something here at Pulpit Rock where we call reflecting with God. And this is where we take a break around the middle of the message to stop and just say, hey, let's let God speak for a minute, take a breath, and recuperate. Here are a few questions that you could talk and reflect with God and pray through. What would you ask a wise grandpa? If you had an opportunity right now to ask somebody that was wise any question, what would it be? How have you seen to this point in your life that life really is change? And then what is a fixed point for you? What is something that you say, I can hold on to this no matter what changes around me? Let me give you a moment to reflect on that, and then we'll come back up and see what Solomon says next. Thank you. Life is always changing. Life is all about change. So in the middle of a life like that, where do we find a fixed point in the fog? This is where Solomon is wise. He can help us reframe the question. Here's how he asks the same question. We might say, what's the point of life? Solomon would say something like this. What does a man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? What's the gain of life? Now, if you assume that the word hebel means vanity or meaningless, what's the answer to this? Nothing. Nothing. Life is meaningless. There is no gain. There is no point. If that's true, let's leave breakfast early and leave this bitter old man alone. But if life is just change, then you understand this is a very important question. In fact, Grandpa might have just figured this is a question that we were asking him. I'll just put on a side thing here. Solomon's going to come back to this question four times in this book. If you are someone who is just now beginning your career in life, or maybe you're somebody at a midpoint where you're trying to assess what your career has done to this point, what's coming up next, it's great to be able to sit down with someone wise like Solomon and say, help me think through work. Now, I want to give you a spoiler alert here. Solomon is not going to give us the answer to this question just yet. That's frustrating because we like to have right away fast questions. But here's the thing. You can't rush Grandpa. He's got stories to tell first. Have you ever noticed that? Hey, just let me ask you this question. Well, let me tell you a story. Ah! So we just asked Solomon a question, and he says, let me tell you a story. But he does give us a hint here in where he's going. There's a phrase here I want you to see. What does a man gain by all the toil at which he toils what? Under the sun. That's a very important phrase. It's going to come up 29 times in this book. It must be something important. It might even hold the key to us helping find a fixed point in life. So I want you to keep your eyes open as you encounter this phrase over and over in the book. But let's stop interrupting him for a second. Just let him finish his thought. Here he goes, verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south, goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on all its circuits the wind returns. All streams run into the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. So Solomon starts talking about earth and wind and fire and water. Notice this, all these things have something in common. Their actions are repeated, but they're never completed. The earth remains, the wind blows, the fire of the sun rises and sets, the water returns to the sea. Now, thousands of years later, Greek philosophers would describe the four elements of life. They thought they were earth, wind, fire, and water. They thought those were the four elements of life. But they assumed and they thought that somehow there was a fifth element out there that unified these, that gave them meaning, that held them together. It was like a search for like a grand unified theory they were thinking about. By the way, there was a movie a few years ago, probably like 20 years ago now, but Bruce Willis was in it called The Fifth Element. Same concept. In this movie, they were searching for this fifth element that could protect the galaxy from danger. Well, Solomon is saying this, I think. If you just look under the sun at what you can see, life is like a machine. We always have the earth. We always have the wind. We always have the fire. We always have the water. They go on in a never-ending cycle. And then he says this. You know what else goes on in a never-ending cycle? People's search for meaning. Verse 8, all things are full of what? Weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Our eyes are never satisfied. Our ears are never filled. Here's what he's saying. The earth never stops remaining. The wind never stops blowing. The sun never stops rising. The water never stops running to the sea. And people never stop searching for and listening for the purpose of life. It's an endless subject. If Solomon lived today, he might be trying to connect us with this truth. He might say, you know, it's kind of like how people are always buying the newest form of phone when their old one is still working. This is a new phenomenon in some ways. It used to be that we would buy something, and then when it broke, we would buy something else. But now we buy something, and then when a new model comes out, even if our old one works fine, we buy that one. We're never satisfied. Weariness. Or you might say it's like how we binge watch TV shows, and when we're done, Netflix is so helpful. It says, your eyes don't seem to be satisfied and your ears don't seem to be filled. May I suggest other shows for you to get hooked on? Weariness. Solomon sips his coffee and he goes on. He says, have you ever noticed that what has been was what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun? Have you heard that phrase before? That's one of the most popular quotes from this book. There's nothing new under the sun. And then he says this, I mean, tell me, is it true? Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? What's the answer? No. It's already been in the ages before us. Now, doesn't this sound like a man who has lived so much life that nothing surprises him anymore? What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new, he says, at least from the perspective of under the sun. Let me connect it in this way. One of my greatest joys in life are dad jokes. Dad jokes are a special category of awesome jokes. For example, why can't you hear a pterodactyl use the bathroom? Because the pee is silent. It's awesome. When is it time to go to the dentist? 2:30. Later, you'll get that one. Why couldn't the pony sing? Because he was a little horse. I love those. I don't care if you don't. I've been waiting for decades to use these. Now, the best part about dad jokes are when my kids, when they were little, when they would come home and they would tell me a new joke. And I didn't have the heart to tell them. We were cracking those jokes before they were even a glimmer in someone's eye. The truth is, no one has ever created dad jokes. They were never new. According to Solomon, they have been already in the ages before us. That Adam was telling Cain and Abel these jokes. Here's the connection. All of life begins to feel like that as you get older. Is that true for some of you that are older in this room? Yeah. You've seen it all before. Yeah, the packaging is new, but life is still life. Here's what happens. People get frenzied and they think, we're the first generation to deal with race, to deal with poverty, to deal with war, religious extremism, immorality. But if you live long enough, you begin to see that Solomon is right. These things have already been in the ages before us. But here's the sad part, he says, verse 11. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who will come after. We forget the lessons of history. We repeat the mistakes. We run and run on the treadmill of life. Now, Grandpa's starting to get a little confusing to me at this point because I'm not really sure he's making sense. First, he said that everything changes, and now he says that nothing changes. Life is change, and yet there's nothing new under the sun. So which is it? I think his point is both. The more things change, the more they stay the same. What does that phrase have to do then with our question we asked? What is the point of life? Well, I think Solomon is telling us that everyone asks these questions at some point. Every person is going to get on this treadmill of meaning. You're going to try this, you're going to try that. You're going to read this, you're going to read that. You're going to go to this, you're going to go to that. Plugging in every kind of approach and saying which one is going to fit. And we all enter into this search to try to understand who we are and why we're here. Solomon, why do you seem to know so much about this search for the point of life? Verse 12, well, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I've been king. As king, I used all of my resources to apply my heart, to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Here's what Solomon is telling us. Guys, I've spent my life on this search. Whatever you can imagine the point of life is, been there, done that. Now, over the next few weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to sit down in this diner with Solomon, and we're just going to let him tell his story about his search for purpose. Here's a guy who had unlimited funds, unlimited power, and he applied his heart to the question, what is the gain? He's going to describe five different approaches he took to life. Now, here's what's amazing about that. His approaches, his journeys, just so happen to be the main journeys that people today in 2016 take to try to find meaning in life. He's going to talk about the time he tried to learn it all. He's going to talk about the time he tried to have it all. He's going to talk about the time he tried to do whatever he wanted. And we're going to hear him talk about each one of those and what resulted from that. But for today, before we get into that, what can we take away from his thought that life is change? Well, before the waitress comes back with the bill, let me suggest three takeaways for us this morning. Here's the first. Questions without easy answers might be the best. Jesus was always asking very simple to understand questions that ended up being bottomless in their depth, right? If you're a person who questions life, if you question God, don't be ashamed of that. It is okay to be honest. Maybe this is why author Herman Melville, who wrote Moby Dick, once called Ecclesiastes the truest of all books. We're going to discover in this book that that drive inside of you to ask these kinds of questions, that's actually something that God himself implanted in you because he wants you to find him. And if you're a person who doesn't click with easy answers, if you're a person that thinks that sometimes Christians check their brains in at the door of the church, if you're a person who thinks that it feels like sometimes you're an outcast because you asked the wrong question in a religious crowd, don't worry about it. The biggest danger is when we stop asking questions. Here's the second takeaway from this first conversation with him. Some questions can't be answered under the sun. Solomon described that we were in this closed system, this machine of earth, wind, fire, and water. And if we're left to our own devices, to our own thoughts, well, we have eyes that are never satisfied and ears that are never filled. And so we're never going to be able to figure out on our own, no matter how much we pull in. We have to have some help from outside the system, from above the sun, that's going to intervene. That's a clue for us of where we need to go. Finally, here's a last takeaway. In a life of change, we must find a fixed point. In the next few weeks, Solomon is going to tell us about points that he thought were fixed. If I could just have knowledge, if I could just have achievement, if I could just have all the pleasure I've wanted in life, that would be a fixed point. But he's going to keep coming back to the one fixed point that does not lie under the sun, but lies above it. Now, I told you he's not going to answer the question this week. Can I just give you a little bit of spoiler if you promise not to tell? Don't tell. At the end of chapter 2, Solomon starts to show his hand. He says, I've learned there's nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. But this also, as I have seen, is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or have enjoyment? Solomon is not saying, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. He's not just saying, I'll just go do what it. No, he's saying, somehow the answer to the question, what is the gain of life, is, can you enjoy God and the life he's given you? And the ability to enjoy life in this way is not something we can find within ourselves. We don't have the power. Our eyes are never satisfied. Our ears are never filled. Enjoying life begins with the ability to receive it from God. Well, we're going to talk with Solomon more about that next week, but let me just kind of close with this thought as we're launching out here. Solomon says over and over, there's nothing new under the sun, but there is something new above the sun. We call that new life in Jesus Christ. See, what Christ offers to do is to break into this cycle that we're living, to break into this closed system, to bring us something from the outside that interrupts our treadmill and offers us life above the sun, life with God. And speaking of Christ, at the end of the Bible, Revelation 21:5, we hear him say, he who is seated on the throne says, behold, I am making all things, what? New. That's what he does. He breaks in, there's nothing new, but he brings in and says, I'm bringing something brand new. A relationship and an idea that you've never had before. The search for meaning under the sun begins with looking above the sun to the hand of God through the Son of God. Will you pause and pray with me here? Lord, I know everyone here, we all have many things in common, but one thing we have in common is we want to know that there's a purpose to our life. We want to find fixed points that are going to enable us to live through the chaos and the change of life. Lord, I pray that you'd use Ecclesiastes as we begin to explore potential ways that we could find that to continue to speak to us, that you would speak outside of the system into us through your word, through your spirit, that we'd hear truth about what you're saying to us. And you continue to call us towards life above the sun. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.